There are so many problems confronting Iraq as the war there drags on into its seventh year. But one of the issues that doesn't get as much attention as perhaps it should is the matter of Iraqi refugees. To this day, millions of Iraqis are displaced either internally or in Syria or Jordan as a result of the conflict. The International Rescue Committee has just released a report on that situation, and we are joined now by Bob Carey, Vice President of IRC's Migration and Resettlement Policy. He recently traveled to Iraq as part of the committee that put together the report, and I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show today for our underreported segment. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, I said millions. Do we have a more specific estimate of how many refugees are currently in or outside of Iraq today?
Well, you know, the numbers from a recent survey in the last couple of months of internally displaced are close to 3 million. And I think there's no reason to believe that it's any smaller than that. In fact, that could be larger. And then the estimates outside of Iraq are 2.2 million, but those are somewhat inexact, so it could be smaller or larger. It's a very large diaspora.
But we're talking about over 5 million, almost 5.5 million people.
Yes, probably one
it's
of the
a
largest,
major city.
Yes, it's probably, one of the largest humanitarian crises of our time, and unfortunately one of the least reported.
How many of them have been displaced since the invasion in 2003?
Oh, virtually everyone. You know, most of the displacements took place post 2006, after the Samarra bombings, and that's really when the violence and interethnic conflict escalated, and certainly also when many people were targeted because of their associations with the U.S. or the coalition forces.
The Samarra bombings were targeted at Shiites.
Yes.
Shiites, the majority, and pretty much the people in control. Was that a message sent to people, don't get comfortable?
Well, I think what it really was a turning point in the conflict that unleashed, unfortunately, an inter-ethnic and inter-religious conflict and violence that has just blown up in subsequent years. So most of the people who you see fled were post-2006, really up until the present, where people continue to leave the country or become internally displaced.
Could those people return to the areas that they left?
I think that's one of the findings of the report, because I think, unfortunately, there's a perception in the public that things have become secure for return. And what we found, and this has been confirmed by reports of the UN, is that the conditions right now do not allow for return. There's not adequate infrastructure, food, clothing, water, sanitation, jobs. Security is really very fragile where it does exist at all. And, we still see continued incidents of violence and bombings and targeted violence. And most of the people who I've met with over the course of three trips to the region, and we've interviewed many refugees and internally displaced, had direct threats of violence against them, which are still outstanding, death threats.
In the former Yugoslavia, we saw, as a result of what was called ethnic cleansing, neighborhoods change. People couldn't return to their homes because other people had been moved in.
And that's very much the case in Iraq as well, that people, if they have a home which is still standing, which many don't, it has been taken over by someone else. Property rights are a huge issue, but the court system is really not functioning. And even if people could return, physically, it's not secure in the neighborhood.
The last report your organization issued on this matter was in 2008. Has the situation improved a little bit?
Yeah, unfortunately, it hasn't. It's only worsened, because what we found then is, at that time, that some Iraqis had fled with savings. For the most part, the educated class, the professionals, the lawyers, the doctors, the teachers were targeted often for political or even criminal reasons.
So there's been a brain drain as well?
Absolutely. The entire political capital of the country has fled. So it also means that there's not an infrastructure, a human infrastructure of doctors or others to provide services inside Iraq. But what it also means, most of these people have long ago exhausted their savings. They can't live or work legally in the countries to which they've fled or in the regions inside Iraq to which they've fled. So they're increasingly you're talking about a destitute population that's unable to house, feed, or clothe themselves, or they're dependent on charity.
Has one ethnic group or one religious group tended to have been displaced more than another?
You know, I think it's our finding is it's fairly pervasive. I mean, there are certain groups that have been particularly targeted, such as Christians, but it's you know, and some other minorities. But
Sunni might be forced out of Shiite areas,
right.
Shiites out of Sunni areas.
Absolutely, that's exactly what has happened. So you know, it's unfortunately kind of a democratic violence, if you will, that it's everyone's being affected.
So when they move to another part of Iraq, where are they going?
Well, I think people are going wherever they can go. You know, they're trying to find a place where they're secure. You find a lot of people who are living in public buildings, schools, or other facilities because that's the only place they can live, in makeshift housing or in temporary accommodations. We met with people. I was personally in north in Kurdistan in Erbil in late October, and many of the people we met there had no legal status. In order to enter Kurdistan, you have to have someone who will vouch for you, and that's a long, complicated process. So they weren't getting access to any public services or support, and that's true throughout Iraq. The system for getting food ration cards, for instance, is very bureaucratic and tied to the place of origin.
Well, we often hear that the Kurdish portion of the country is more stable politically and economically. Have the Kurds also been affected, or have they been largely spared?
No, they've been affected, and certainly there are you know, ethnic Kurds from other parts of the region who fled there, and you know, you realize that you're very much struck by it if you're, as I was in Erbil, when you realize that, you know, Mosul, which is a center of violence, is only 60 kilometers away. You know, it's a wrong turn on a highway. So the violence is immediate, it's nearby, and everyone I've met with, and this is, you know, whether Iraqis in the U.S., in Jordan, Syria, or inside Iraq has a direct experience of violence. Most have witnessed the death of a family member or been tortured or the death of a child. You know, so it's, you know, and that's universal. I don't think, you know, I've never encountered in my many years of work with refugee populations a group where the levels of trauma, physical and psychological, are so universal.
Well, generally in refugee situations, we see tent villages initially, but then after a while they develop into real villages. Are we seeing any, do we have any sense of permanent refugee areas?
Well, it's a different situation in that, unlike, you know, the normal refugee crises, if you will, of the past, Iraqis are for the most part not in camps. Which in a way makes it more difficult to bring public attention to the crisis because they're living in among the general population, whether it's in Damascus or Amman. You know, you find 10 people in one room without adequate sanitation in a poor neighborhood. So it's kind of a hidden crisis. It doesn't create the photo opportunities which garner public attention of people lined up at a clinic or in a camp, which is unfortunate because it means it adds to the you know, ability to ignore it, unfortunately.
My guest is Bob Carey, Vice President of the IRC's, the International Rescue Committee's Immigration and Resettlement Policy. We're talking about the Iraqi refugee crisis on our Underreported today, and I imagine that people who have been displaced still are doing all the things that people do. They're having children, many of whom are of school age. How is the crisis affecting them?
You know, I think that is one of the most tragic aspects of a horrible situation is that we're really looking at what is potentially a lost generation. You know, in any conflict, women and children are often the most vulnerable, and certainly we've seen women who are victims of sexual violence and forced into prostitution to survive, but also children who are being forced to work in many places don't have access to schools. Or they've had their education interrupted. And then in addition, if they do manage to get an education, there's no future opportunities for them. So you have essentially either an uneducated population or one with no hope for the future, which is a real loss to society and the world, and I think a potential security threat long term if unaddressed.
You also report that 60% of the refugee population is under 25.
Yes.
So we probably are creating angry young people.
Absolutely.
Or somebody is creating angry young
people.
Yes,
I mean, I think the international community, by ignoring this crisis, is creating a situation which is not going to go away. It's in the interest of the world community to address it in a comprehensive way, because long term, the human costs and the security costs far outweigh the costs of serving these people now.
Is the situation any better for the refugees who are living abroad? I guess most of them are in Syria and Jordan.
Well, I think it's marginally better, but Jordan and Syria are not signatories to the UN Refugee Convention, which means they don't recognize these people have a legal right to remain there. They can't work legally. They have limited access so they're forced either to be exploited in the underground economy, but they have the same problems. They can't support themselves, their families. They're living in horrible conditions, and they're always at risk of forced return back to Iraq at any moment.
And I'd imagine health care would become an issue, other things.
Yes.
Is it better in one or the other? Are more people in Syria or Jordan?
Yeah, the overwhelming majority, I think the estimates in Syria are up to 1 million, Jordan, somewhere between 400,000 and 600,000, and then smaller numbers of people in Lebanon, Egypt, Turkey.
And if people, if outsiders gave some money to those countries, targeted for help to helping the refugees, do you think they'd be any more welcoming?
Well, I think that is correct. There has been some support, but I think it's not been adequate. And I think our concern, and one of the things we detail in the report, is that public attention is turning away from this crisis. As the needs are getting greater, the funding is being cut back. And so it really creates an even greater risk.
Well, the United States has just appointed a new ambassador to Syria after 5 years of there not being one. Do you think that better ties between the two countries could improve the situation for the refugees?
I think we're certainly hopeful that that will be the case. And even over the period of time that we've been involved in these visits, we've seen a lessening of the distance between the two countries. But, the enormity of the problem is not going to be solved easily. And it really needs a comprehensive multinational approach to what are we going to do for people who have to remain where they are, who have to be resettled, or who create conditions for return so that people can do it safely.
Is there likely to be a multinational approach? Don't most people outside of this country subscribe to the Colin Powell doctrine? If you broke it, you got to fix it?
Unfortunately, I think that is the view.
So they expect the United States to take care of most of this.
I think that, and certainly the response from European countries has been limited.
And we are now focusing more on Afghanistan than on Iraq, and kind of suggesting Iraq should take care of itself. Is Iraq capable of taking care of itself?
No.
What kind of healthcare infrastructure does it have?
It's very limited. What we found inside Iraq is that many of the government ministries really are not functioning effectively.
Now, why isn't oil paying for all of these things the way the people in the Bush administration projected?
I think that's a very good question, and it's one that I don't fully understand the answers to. We're looking primarily at the humanitarian side, and all that we have been able to observe is that for some reason the system is not functioning. And if people, there is a system of food aid which existed in Iraq before the war, the oil for food program and food vouchers, but we found that with people who moved internally or were forcibly displaced, they can't access, in most cases, the food ration program. They can't get basic services once they relocate it. And there are a lot of bureaucratic obstacles to doing that. Same thing, there's supposed to be an assistance program for returnees, but we found that very, very few returnees are able, if they did return, are able to get any form of support.
What happens when a displaced Iraqi seeks asylum in the United States?
Well, I think the U.S. has very much improved in terms of the response of allowing some Iraqis, particularly those with U.S. associations who are greatly at risk, to come here. However, as we detailed in our last report, the U.S. resettlement system is broken. It really is not a coherent program, limited support for refugees. They are expected to go to work quickly, which was feasible when the U.S. economy was strong. But right now, with 10% unemployment, refugees are disproportionately affected. You find that it's very difficult for us to find entry-level jobs for refugees, particularly many of whom have been tortured or traumatized.
How many have actually gotten into this country?
It's about 27,000 over the last 3 years.
Over out of 5.2 million.
Yeah, so, you know, still a relatively small number.
And other countries are concerned. Australian Public Broadcasting quotes the migration expert Dr. Philip Marfleet of the University of East London is saying that Australia is likely to see an increase in the number of Iraqi asylum seekers arriving by boat because of the refugee crisis in the Middle East. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, I was in Malaysia last spring and Iraqis are showing up in Malaysia. So I think people are fleeing to wherever they can flee. And that's not, you're finding it in Europe, Sweden. I would not, any people will, when desperate, flee by whatever means is available to them in order to save their lives.
Elections will soon be held in Iraq. Has this been an issue that's been addressed during the campaign?
Not that I'm aware of. I think, you know, what we've seen as a consequence of the elections is an increase in violence. In the end of January, there was a bombing, which is well reported, for instance, in three hotels in central Baghdad, and IRC's office was largely wiped out in that. We were in the same compound as one of the hotels, and a number of our staff, five of them, sustained injuries, though none of them life-threatening. But, you know, there is the security is really deteriorating around the elections.
And I would assume there's a certain amount of disaffection. 400 potential candidates have been barred from running.
Right, I'm sure.
And if I were a Sunni refugee, I might think, gee, why would I want to go back to a country that doesn't want me?
I think that's a very good point. And I think it's important to remember that refugees in this crisis, you know, technology has really changed the nature of things. People have, even if they can't feed themselves, they can get a cheap cell phone on a street in Damascus or Amman or whatever. And they know exactly what the conditions are like in the neighborhood on the street where they left. And so they know that it's not safe. They know about the killings that are taking place.
IRC's report also notes that there's been a surge in female-headed households in the Iraqi refugee community.
Yes.
Now, women, the lot of women has deteriorated since the invasion, hasn't it?
Very much so. You have, many women have lost their husbands to kidnappings and death, but you also find that even to have legal ownership of their house, for instance, their husband has to be proven dead, which is a 4-year process in many instances, even if you have the legal means to do it. So you have women without access to any kind of protection, without any real, there are very few jobs available, and the security situation is horrific. So, you know, women are very, very vulnerable.
You said that this is an overlooked major crisis. Aren't the NGOs in Iraq addressing it?
Well, I think, you know, the NGO role, and certainly IRC is doing work in Iraq. We are we're providing support to schools. We're, you know, working on school reconstruction, housing. But, the funding is limited. And the role of an NGO is, you know, really to do work that, to the extent security allows that work to be done, and to the extent funding is available. And we can't take the place of governments.
Bob Carey is Vice President of the International Rescue Committee's Migration and Resettlement Policy. You were in Iraq in November.
Yes.
And he has participated in writing a report about the current situation with Iraqi refugees, a serious crisis. And I want to thank you so much for participating in today's underreported segment.
Thank you so much for having me.